Welcome back to the Famous Monsters Podcast, your home to all things horror, sci-fi, fantasy, and that moment when you realize that staying out of the woods will keep you away from danger just a little bit longer. I mean, come on, guys. Snow White, cursed. Little Red Riding Hood, killed. Ash Williams, cursed. Horny teens at Camp Crystal Lake, killed. All these freaking teens that keep on going into... I'm sorry. I am George, your jack of all trades. And with me is Jason the Falcon.
Hi, guys. I'm definitely in the woods.
And also with us, our art director, Jennifer Pham.
No, I'm a city kid. I don't go near the forest stuff, so I guess I'm safe. But hi. Yeah,
don't go camping. Danger is out there.
I'm a child of comfort.
Well, if you haven't figured it out yet, all of us over here at the FM Manor are big cinephiles. So today we're going to tackle a few movies that we just happened to check out recently at the theaters. One being Gretel and Hansel, and the other one being Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of the One Harley Quinn. I feel like that one's trying to come, but don't be a menace to society while drinking your juice in the hood.
Honestly.
But these movies came out so close to each other that we couldn't help but watch both and talk about them. And we have possibly more thoughts for one than the other one. So without further ado, let's get into the fine tale from the young brothers Grimm, Gretel and Hansel. Now, this is a film or a story that we're used to hearing as Hansel and Gretel. They obviously switched it to have a different approach, and we're obviously focusing more on the sister, played by Sophia Lillis, obviously known from the It films. Did an amazing job in those films. Loved her so much. I'm always excited to see young kids in these popular films go on to other things and how they can show the depth of what they have to offer to the craft. This also had two other actors, though. Samuel Leakey, who played Hansel, and Alice Cridge, who played Hold of the Witch in the Woods, who's possibly more known for being the Borg Queen in the Star Trek franchise later on, which was done with the Next Generation crew. I'll start off with my own personal things. I wanted to like it so much because everything looked really cool in the trailers. And it had like that nice dark approach. And you felt like you were getting a grittier, more adult look at the story that you knew as a kid that you'd hear about in school. Your mom and dad would tell you about this story going to sleep at night, you know. And before I even get to the stuff that maybe I didn't appreciate, something I did really like was that aspect of thinking of a childhood story that you are told to. Like, this isn't something I talked about within our group. You know, not many people read this story as much as they're told this story. They hear about it. Maybe they see it on TV through some Reading Rainbow-esque kind of thing. You know?
Yeah.
And so in the movie, you get a lot of narration about how the witch came to be. You get narration from Gretel and what she's going through in the whole story. And I really like that. I like that as a good idea, you know, of being told this story, because that's how you hear about it. It's always a story that's being told.
Right.
The narration was very welcome in that thought. But unfortunately, it was also so overused that you got nothing out of it. There was no substance behind the narration that you were given.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of tell what exactly they wanted to do with it. I mean, you could really say that about the entire movie, to be honest. Like, what is it that they wanted to do with this? Because it seemed like they had some good ideas, like the narration, but then they were using it poorly, and it was also so inconsistent. Mm-hmm. It kind of became a little bit jarring after a while, because it was like, having narration just in the beginning of the story, I feel like I've heard that before, and it works for like the setup of something like a fairy tale, but it would come back every so often and then get dropped again. And then I think about, there was some point where they just never dealt with it again until the very end.
Yeah.
When it just kind of seemed like a quick wrap up. Sort of thing. It was very inconsistent and bizarre, honestly.
It just fell flat. Like, just the delivery of it, it just felt so boring to me.
Yeah.
Which, for people who aren't aware, if you haven't watched it yet, I wouldn't say don't watch it. It's filmed in a very stylistic way. that mm-hmm. can't be visually appealing to the person who's into filmmaking. And mm-hmm. and this movie is only like an hour and a half long or so. But you bring up the boring thing. It's like they managed to make it feel like it was 12 hours long somehow.
Yeah.
Which is quite the feat.
Yeah.
That's some pacing.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially when nothing really happens. Like the regular story that you're used to happens, and then there's like the addition of like a couple other things. But it's like, if someone were to ask you how long, like, tell me the story of Hansel and Gretel, how long would it take you to tell?
Right, it's less than two minutes.
Yeah, honest. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not much to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there is deeper lore to it, of course, but. I didn't think this even delved that deep into the lore of Hansel and Gretel.
Right. Like, I do appreciate that they didn't beat around the bush when it came to the main story. It's like, they're not trying to make us guess whether the witch is evil or not, because mm-hmm. everyone already knows that she is. So I did kind of appreciate that, but then it just fell flat. The whole thing felt really weirdly flat and convoluted, and I didn't hate it. Like, I mean, if anyone who's listening read my review on famousmonsters.com, I gave it a 5 out of 10, but almost all of those points are for ideas that they had that didn't go anywhere, and then the visuals. Like, the visuals is really the only like strong positive that I would give this movie, but I am also into the aesthetic of it. So if someone doesn't appreciate this particular aesthetic that they gave it, you know, it's not really going to mean much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was the thing that really took me out of it, was that there were so many parts that were good ideas, but just didn't have anything fulfilling behind them. They didn't come to fruition, you know? And one of the biggest things for me that mm-hmm. really from the beginning, I was just like, okay, I can't follow this, is the fact that every single person that spoke had a different accent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like our main character of Sophia Lillis, like she had an American accent. And then her brother had something totally different, like maybe something kind of English, but also maybe kind of Dutch, Polish. I don't know. And same thing for like the witch who was totally like far East European.
Yeah.
And like, then they straight up do meet an English person who was the huntsman. He's English. Uh-huh. It's like, how is it that every person has a different accent? Like, where are you in the world? I can't keep track of this. Like
what's actual you know? Melting pot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But at the same time, you know that you're definitely at a certain timeline because of what they're wearing, where the setting of it's like how all of the architecture is. Like, okay, this is obviously back in the day, maybe during like one of the big plagues. Mm-hmm. And during mm-hmm. that time, you understand how the patriarchy is, and like, you know, people had a certain place of where they belonged within that structure, you know? So right. you understood from that, okay, this is where we are, obviously. So in terms of like, why doesn't everyone just have the same voice? I don't get this, you know?
But
saying on those points, like this movie also had a message behind it, and they made the Gretel character have a very strong opinion, which is very reasonable to have, because she ends up going to try to get a job for some dude who's like a lord or a duke or something. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah,
something like that. Yeah. And I don't think they ever actually specified, so I don't think there's anything to remember. Yeah,
insert local rich guy here.
Pretty much.
Yeah, it was very that.
But he definitely insinuates to wanting to use her sexually. She's there for a cleaning job, and he wants her to clean other things.
Yeah.
And with perfect reason, she doesn't take the job. I don't blame her. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, during that timeline, she wouldn't have had a choice but to take that job.
That's true.
You know?
How old would you say she was in that?
From what I was reading like a few like snippets of interviews with the director, and she was meant to be around 16 and Hansel was meant to be around 8. Whereas in the original story, they're the same age and they're 12. So they basically just kind of split the difference there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they added that element of it, and then Hansel obviously is too young to understand like what the whole deal with that is. But then her mom, who is already like otherwise shown to be pretty mean, kind of gets on her case about it. And what was weird to me was that the, like you said, the movie had a message, but other than Gretel herself, who's meant to be like the, you know, the protagonist character that we kind of connect to, the only person to talk to her about like the injustices of the world was the witch.
Yeah.
So it was sort of like, are you saying that this is a good thing or a bad thing? Is this meant to be like a weak attempt at making her kind of morally gray? Like, what is exactly going on here? Because yeah, the witch at that moment made some good points, but then 2 minutes later she's like, and now to get away from that you have to eat your brother.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is not really, I would say, a balanced or reasonable response.
Yeah.
But it definitely made the movie's message very confusing.
Yeah. Speaking of this, these points now, like, if you're listening, it's like, why would she want her to eat her brother? It's like, we've come to find out that Gretel has powers. Like, she has witch powers, apparently. Which mm-hmm. is a twist that I actually liked. I thought that was a great position to put to it. And if they had really nurtured that idea a little bit more, and maybe had the witch really put a wedge between her and her brother and corrupt her a bit, almost like a Jedi Sith kind of thing, you know, bring her to the dark side, which that's what it kind of felt like, especially with some of the powers being used, feeling like the Force.
Yeah.
You know, I would have honestly really enjoyed that whole process of her just truly manipulating her. Or even to say, if it wasn't even put on manipulation, maybe everything that's happening is true and real, and she shows her the way, you know?
Yeah.
And like really...
I'm sorry. I feel like they kind of tried to do that. It was just, well, the setup wasn't really right, because there was that point, you know, in the beginning where when they first get to the house, they're obviously excited because they're starving, so then there's all this food, and the, you know, the... Hansel's super excited because that's all he's been dreaming about is food.
Yeah.
You know? And Gretel's been very cautious. Like, we don't take gifts, you know, everything comes with a price. Like, what's the catch here? But then all of a sudden, you know, when she's starting to learn a little bit from the witch, all of a sudden she's like, oh no, we're staying. But then all of a sudden Hansel's like, I don't want to stay here anymore. What happened to like not accepting gifts? There is no kind of transition when that happened, like it just all of a sudden these were their mindsets suddenly. Like, when did Hansel have that realization where he matured a little bit? He threw some axes in the wood, and then all of a sudden he's like, you know, I probably shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
I'm eight.
Yeah, they didn't really lay any groundwork for any of it. It was like everything, it was every bit of character development was very like, it was told not shown, and then they didn't develop any of it at all, to the point where it's like, I almost wish this had just been like a short film, or maybe even like a short film that's part of some kind of like small anthology where they maybe take like three or four different fairy tales that all are kind of like this, and then add like that twist of the element where maybe the magic is sort of a through line, and it's like, oh, these people that in the original fairy tales didn't have any kind of powers or anything all of a sudden can use this magic, and this is the different ways that they use this. That would have been more interesting, but because they tried to make this some kind of a feature film, it seems like they had a script that was not long enough, and then tried to just fill it in visually instead of going back and sort of trying to add to the script or edit it in any kind of way.
That actually gives me like a wonderful idea, because I love the sound of that. Like, it's so true. Mm-hmm. This got condensed into like 15 minutes and just focused on that. It could have been so amazing. And you could have had, because right now, as soon as you said it, I was like, oh my God, that was such a cool movie. It could have been called The Grimm. And then they could have had like another story with like Rapunzel. And she's has the prince that goes up her hair. But we come to find out that she does that with every prince and she eats them all.
Oh, that's amazing.
Something that's just like one cool little idea. Twist. Yeah.
Give me that.
I mean, you could even use the character of the Huntsman, because I thought that was kind of an mm-hmm. interesting character, and I wanted to know more about him and what he was up to with those weird monsters in that place that never got brought up again. He could be a character that he's like the little bit of a connection to each story, like even if like he's just showing up really briefly, just like he did, and we don't have to know that much about him, but enough to make you think like, okay, this is all one kind of connected world. Just to add a little bit like more depth to it, because I would like to see more of this world. I just want the story to be there, and it just wasn't for this film.
Yeah, I think what it really felt like, I think I told me and you talked about this before, it's like it felt like the director of this watched like Hereditary and Midsommar. It's like, man, I can't wait to make a film like that. Mm-hmm. And then they handed him this script of Hansel and Gretel, and he's like, and they're like, we don't know what to do with this. He's like, I got it. And he's like, let's call it Gretel and Hansel, and I want to put some shapes. Like, who likes triangles? Triangle, and we're gonna be super pretentious about everything. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't come to that world. Like, yeah. He didn't get anywhere close to what that guy could do.
Yeah, right.
It was really unfortunate.
They spent all their budget on lighting gels and not on any script editing whatsoever.
And that set, like, I gotta say, like, the actual cabin looked cool.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
The window.
Totally. Oh, I loved that window. That
was super cool.
Yeah. Yeah, no, there was a lot of elements that I really liked. It just, the story was not any of them.
Yeah. Like, I think you mentioned the music earlier. And first of all, I'm going to backtrack a second. So straight from the beginning, like, you always have like your production intros of like who put this movie, who's paying for this film. And it starts off with Orion Films or whatever. And it's the same intro that you saw from like the 80s. If you watch like RoboCop or whatever, the same thing. And I was like, wow, this is an old intro. Like, it has like the grit to it and everything, as if like it was on VHS. And the music had that same feel. Like, it felt like an 80s horror film for me when I was listening to it, specifically a movie that I reference quite a bit within our circles of Dead Time Stories. Like, there's a certain synth keyboard kind of feel to it, and just like ominous feeling, but like from that decade specifically. And I felt that all the way through. It's like, this felt like an old film, but shot with new production equipment, you know? It was all HD, 4K.
Yeah, that's when that Orion's picture or Orion Pictures screen came up in the beginning, I thought that it was gonna kind of mean something like, oh, this movie is kind of like, it's gonna hit some nostalgia points. But it just kind of seemed like it was one of those things that they did just to kind of for the hell of it. Like, I mentioned this in my review too, but and it kind of ties in with the narration thing a little bit, but they were doing this thing, especially in the beginning, but throughout, where the subject of each shot was dead center. And they were playing a lot like with the sets and everything with framing. And I thought that it was going to mean something, like, because like paired with the narration and the whole sort of like overture about fairy tales, and when you learn about them, like if you're told about them or if you read them or whatever, because there was the other fairy tale that they were referencing, I thought that it was going to make some kind of statement about that or have some kind of meaning. But it just kind of seemed to be like, oh, because it looks cool. So it was just another thing that, like, this was a cool idea, but where did it go? It didn't really land anywhere. It just kind of trailed off into nothing.
A decision like that is nice and all for specific scenes, like the triangle scene, like seeing the sky through the forest and like that, the moonlight and everything. Those little moments feel right to CP centered, but then you lose some of the emotion and the feeling you're trying to even get across within these characters if everything's always dead centered and like picturesque.
Right.
It got to a point where you felt like it could have just been picked out from a picture book, and you could have just had some subtext below it describing the scene.
Yeah, honestly. I was actually kind of wondering if the whole thing was not real. I kind of have this idea in my head that none of anything that happened after they ate the mushrooms is real.
All of that was a hallucination.
Right.
You mean the best part of the whole movie?
Yeah, honestly. Although, like, even that, like, no movie I have ever seen or probably will see for a while did the representation of tripping the way that Midsommar did. So it, even this fell flat. It's like, oh, everything's spinny. It's like you have already seen this done on screen visually in a perfect way. Just take a hint from it is how I felt about it.
I just love the idea of two children tripping on shrooms.
Right. After the one says, eat me.
Yeah. Right. I had a whole conversation with it too. Like, are you a good mushroom or are you a bad mushroom?
Right.
It's like, she was already done before she ate right. that thing.
Right.
Yeah. Which that scene had implications that could have been really cool. Like, so many different parts of it. It's like, it was showing us, I think, that she had powers right from there. If she right. truly thought that the mushroom was good to eat, it's like, all right, so there's something that she's able to do here.
Right.
And maybe that was a big part of it. But I would have loved if, let's say, she was just talking to the mushroom to be playful for her brother's sake and, like, make mm-hmm. light of the situation. And let's say she couldn't actually understand it. And it looked like the brother was about to eat it regardless.
Yeah. Right.
And I would have loved if he ate it and then she's just like, no, the mushroom said it's not good, and he's already like five mushrooms deep. You know? And she's like, no. And she's trying to, like, make him regurgitate mushrooms, but he's out. And now because of that, they have to deviate from their path of which the Huntsman told them to go.
That would make a lot more sense, yeah.
Like, that's what I thought was coming. But instead, like, oh no, they tripped for a second. It's like, okay. Didn't expect that. So yeah, that was Gretel and Hansel.
Yeah. I think it probably would be better, like, if you're going to watch it, you might want to just have it on in the background and pick your own. It looked like it felt like a very long music video that didn't have any really, like, significant standout music to it. So just do what you do with Nosferatu and put on your own soundtrack and maybe it'll be better.
Yeah, so this is some Tool. That's what I'd advise. Put on some Tool and watch this and you'd be good.
Yeah. Honestly.
Speaking of Tools, the other movie we watched was Birds of Prey and the Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn. Now, I say that not because Quinn's a tool. Hold on. This is going to go somewhere. Okay. It's because the bad guy that she has to face is a tool.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All
right. Yeah, it's true.
The two dudes Fair. that we see in this movie are the Uberest of all tools. And that's about as far as their characters go is in toolage. But this film was led by the wonderful Margot Robbie after her success with the Suicide Squad. I'm pretty sure Warner Brothers DC had no choice but to make another movie with her because of how well people liked her, despite the mm-hmm. fact that movie was bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually did a super masochistic thing and put myself through watching Suicide Squad today while I was working on other stuff. I mean, I had it on in the background, but I was like, this will be interesting to compare, contrast, and oh my goodness, like, if we're talking soundtracks, like, oh, Suicide Squad had a bad soundtrack, but Birds of Prey had a really good one that I have been listening to on Spotify.
So. I felt like the soundtrack to Suicide Squad was the better part of it.
Well, it was better part of the movie itself.
But it still was really bad. It was utilized very poorly. But
you didn't like that jam Lamborghini with, like, Skrillex and some rapper that I can't remember?
Everything about Suicide Squad except for Margot Robbie is bad.
But I liked the logo.
Yeah. Yeah. The logo was fine. Some of the posters were fine.
Hi, wait, had you really seen this movie beforehand? Before today?
Suicide Squad?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had.
Okay, so
you watched it twice.
That again.
I had it on in the background.
That's just in your search history now, though.
I think I'll be okay. But wow, talk about a movie doing everything better than its predecessor. This is definitely one of them. Not that the bar was high even remotely, but I really, really loved Birds of Prey. I've actually saw it again since we saw it on Thursday.
Oh, wow.
I saw it again last night. So, yeah, I'm a big fan.
I thought it was a really fun time. It was a visual spectacle, and it was just so much fun. And I think the cast, everyone did a good job. George and I aren't particularly big fans of Rosie Perez, but, you know, she didn't bother us.
Yeah. Well, hold on. You're going too far there. I don't know if I can't say she didn't bother me.
I mean,
but
she didn't take me out of the film.
Yeah, yeah. I can agree with that. Yeah. I know I should have like Latino camaraderie. It's like, yes, Puerto Ricans getting parts, but we don't have to get all the parts sometimes. Or at least certain people. Like, I would have been happier with like J-Lo or something. I don't care.
Just anyone.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I don't want to see J-Lo in that part either. I'm just saying, like, I can't stand Rosie Perez's voice, but that's just a whole other situation altogether.
Yeah. I think it worked for that role in particular, for Renee Montoya, but wow, imagine J-Lo as her. I can't do it. I can't imagine it.
Yeah, either. It'd be like a totally different person.
Right.
Well, you know what would have stayed the same? The attitude would have stayed the same. That wouldn't change at all. Yeah. They're both Brooklynites, you know, or they're both from New Yorkers. It's like that wouldn't have been any different at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just the voice, that nasally voice would have been the difference. But as we were saying, like, this was a fun movie. This was very fun. I don't think, I know I could speak on this part for myself. It's like, I didn't expect this to be good. The promotion for this film, the fact that it came from its predecessor being the Suicide Squad, which was horrible. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was not expecting what I got out of it, which was a feel-good time, honestly. And this is like, you know, we speak about messages a lot with some of these films, and this had it too, and it was promoting itself as that, you know, like, as me and Jen kind of talk about, like, the girl power thing and everything. It's like, that's good. Girl power is great. You don't have to throw it at me either, though. And they were kind of pushing that in the promotions. But when I watched it, I was like, oh, it's not so much like that at all. Like, why did you promote it that way? Why did you make this seem like this was the second coming of Captain Marvel and Let's Hate on Men extravaganza? I didn't feel that whatsoever. I just felt like we're hating on these guys because these guys are douchebags. Mm-hmm. And that's it. You know?
Yeah.
And there was an explanation behind everything. Everything was reasonable.
Yeah. Even the sort of like side moments where you're watching men sort of screw with people, like the scene where the girl was on the table and the guy agreed to cut the dress off her, or when Doc sold Harley out, like there wasn't really a time where there was a guy in it that had the best intentions of everyone but himself in it, like, consistently. It went back and forth the whole time, but none of it felt ham-fisted, for sure. It did feel like very natural. Even like the big team up in the end, felt pretty reasonable. Of like, oh, they're not here just for Cassandra. Like, they're here for all of us because we all, you know, either stab them in the back or are building a case against them. Like, it was all pretty reasonable. Yeah. Whereas then you, like, in contrast, you have like the moment at the end of Avengers Endgame where it's like all of these women that were in completely different spots across the battlefield all of a sudden linked up for like a cool shot. Like, that felt dumb. No parts of Birds of Prey had that feeling.
Yeah, felt natural and genuine as opposed to just forced for, you know, some press.
You can tell they took their time with the script and the construction of the story.
Well, I think for Harley Quinn's portion of it, yes, I can agree with that. Harley Quinn was definitely, everything about her story was fleshed out to the fullest. Mm-hmm. I feel everyone else around her, maybe not so much.
Yeah.
But I will say, to add to that, like when you mentioned the whole thing with them coming together, she says that they're all there for them. But the truth being is they're only there for Harley Quinn and the girl with the diamond. They don't even know the Huntress is there.
It's true.
That's true.
You know? And I think as far as Black Mask is concerned, Zaz probably took care of Black Canary already. So I don't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Well, they did have a phone conversation though, where Zaz was like, "Do you want me to kill her?" And he said, "No, I'm going to come to you." So I think like Huntress and Renee. Yeah. Those,
oh, yeah, and her too. Yeah.
They didn't know they were there, but like the three of them though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But she lumped the other two in as if like they were there for them. It's like, they don't know about them.
Yeah.
Once they see them, they're going to want to kill them for sure.
Right. Like, it's just like icing on the cake. Yeah.
At this point, it's just like, you know, association. It's like, you know, I didn't rob the store, but I was with these guys who did. So I guess I'm guilty too.
Yeah.
But I don't want to get into cons yet. I really want to talk about all the really good stuff still, because there was a lot of good stuff, specifically like Harley Quinn. I thought this really encapsulated Harley Quinn for who she is way more than Suicide Squad. Suicide Squad gave you just like a glimpse of how cool she is. And this really showed like everything about, like, it shows she's smart. That's one of the things I actually have a gripe with the comic books at times, is they forget exactly how smart she is. You know, it's like she has a doctorate degree. Like, she's not an idiot. And I like how she actually pinpoints everyone's neuroses. And says exactly what it is in a critical way, not clinical way. And then she pokes fun at it in a clever Harley way.
Yeah.
Love that so much.
Yeah. They definitely, like, in writing her parts, like, they definitely didn't forget any part of who she was. Like, and even like, and you mentioned this too, when we were talking about it, like in her fight scenes, like comparing these fight scenes in Birds of Prey to the ones in Suicide Squad, like Suicide Squad was so generic, and these ones you could tell were tailored for, like, she is obviously like really good at melee weapons. Like, she was excited when she saw that baseball bat in the evidence room, and she also was super acrobatic with it and would kind of use the environment really well. Like, she you could definitely see
her really good.
Her fight scenes were super good. Yeah. I mean, I think they were all pretty good. But hers, she had the most, obviously, but they were the strongest by far, I'd say.
Yeah. The fight choreography in general is really good. Like, they all, between delivering them and receiving, there were some hard hits.
Yeah.
Like, they were rough. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a few times where I'm sitting there, I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Harley in particular seemed to have an affinity for ruining people's knees.
Definitely.
Yes, yeah. There could have been a little thing at the end, like, no legs were actually broken during the filming of this film.
That would be really funny.
Yeah.
I think what helped promote how good those fight scenes were, specifically Harley's, was how they were shot. Like, you had nice long shots and they were all wide shots. So you got to see every hit. You know, none of it was cut scenes for her. You got to see every motion of her flipping through something and then swinging around. And you got to feel that hit, as opposed to, like, let's say a Bourne movie where it's just like cut, 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 cut. And you assume that something really action packed is happening when nothing's really happening at all.
Right.
You know, they really let you bathe in the moment.
Yeah, they used slow motion really effectively during those, like, where it didn't feel overdone. Like, there's a lot of superhero movies where if they're not cutting incessantly, they're using a crazy amount of slow motion. And I felt like it was very well placed and not overdone, where you could really see her, like, how acrobatic she is and how hard the hits were, that kind of stuff. There wasn't really any hits from Harley that seemed out of place, where it's like, oh, that wouldn't do that to a person. There was like maybe one or two, like, she swung her leg down onto someone and I was like, it seems like that should have been a knee more than her shin, but it was hardly ever. There were also some shots that I really liked where it was filmed entirely in profile for a few seconds, where it made it feel like you were like a Mortal Kombat match or like Injustice or something like that. Yeah, like it felt like a fighting game.
Yeah, no, like all that stuff was really awesome. For, and like, another thing that I think was great about how she was handled is the, like in this, we talk about narration in the last film. There's more narration in this film, all narrated by Harley. Like it's like we're in her head through this whole film. And in the beginning, now this part's kind of like a good, bad thing, because I liked her narration and how she gave us exposition for every character. And the only reason I like it is because of how she talks about each person, how she talks about the moments. And even there's a part where she's recounting a scene and she's like, oh, wait, I think I did that part wrong. Let me go over that again. And
yeah,
telling a story like this is bad. It's very messy. And for a structure of how you film, you shouldn't do it this way. And it could actually hurt this movie a little bit, but it made sense for her character because it's like, all right, she's so crazy and scattered brain. We're showing you exactly how messed up she is in the head by her telling you all this stuff and not recounting it properly. So like it really kind of works to her benefit.
It was really relatable to me because how many times have you and I had a conversation where I'm trying to tell you what happens in a movie or a show or just in life? And I'm just like, wait a minute, let me backtrack to this part because I forgot to tell you about that part and I'm all over the place. That felt too real for me.
Yeah. Like I have seen some complaints from some people about the structure of it, how it does kind of jump around and it tells some parts and then you're like, wait, why is this happening? And then it jumps back and explains it. And I'm almost wondering if, like, in addition to being very accurate to how Harley would tell a story, jumping around like that, I almost wonder if it was a little bit of an FU to Suicide Squad. And the way that they structured that, because they did the same thing and they did it so poorly, it turned into a mess, because that's what the whole first two thirds was, right? Of like introducing characters and going into a flashback and then introducing another character, going into a flashback, and then here they all are, and here we're going to do another flashback, and now we're jumping around to here. Like, it was very scattered in a way that didn't make sense and just felt like poor editing, whereas this was very purposeful and done well, I think, in a way that it kept the pacing like really, really engaged, almost in sort of like a Deadpool 2 way. Because remember how it starts off with him, right? That's what I was saying. Like this, it feels like kind of like a girl version of like Deadpool crossed with John movie. But I'm wondering if some of it was like a, see, this is how you do the thing that you wanted to do.
It's definitely a risky move whenever you tell a story that way. But it definitely worked out in their benefit considering who she is and how it all played out. There's at least, you know, there's a caption. This happened 4 minutes ago. Like, this was 2 weeks ago. Like, if you're going in a flashback, it tells you it's in a flashback as opposed to I'm going to throw some shade at a television show that I actually liked. But unlike in The Witcher, where it just... we're not going to get into that today, but... You know, in The Witcher, it does. They do go back and forth between flashbacks and present day and all this stuff without actually a caption. So you're left with like, wait, what? Where are we now? Oh, okay, we just went. Wait, was that in the past? Harley actually tells you that this is happening. Yeah. where we are.
Yeah,
that's the perfect example, because I enjoyed The Witcher, but at the same time, as someone who knew nothing about The Witcher, I was just like, what the is happening right now? Where am I? What this? And Jen's familiar with part three of the game, so I was like, what's happening? Tell me what's going on. Where are we? What year is it?
I felt like Gretel and Hansel just high on streams watching that, because I didn't know what was going on at first.
Oh my god.
But you figure it out.
Yeah, no, this was like just nonstop entertainment, hilarious dialogue, hard-hitting fights, as we said, you know, and the colors on the screen were so vibrant and just jumping out at you. Like, I don't like 3D films. I'm not about wearing 3D glasses and having 3D experience, but I couldn't help but feel like, oh, wow, how cool would this scene have been if it was done in 3D? Like the scene where she's in the police station and she's shooting every cop with like the pellet
glitter bombs.
Yeah, the glitter bombs. Yeah. Like that was really cool and stylish, and it fit her character so much. Especially because after she leaves the Joker, she does become less lethal than how she used to be. You know, she's when she's on a mission, she doesn't feel the need to always kill everybody necessarily.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I really thought that when I watched it. I was like, man, this would have been kind of cool to see this just coming at me.
Yeah, honestly. Especially, I feel like the bright, like how vivid the whole film was, even in ways where it seemed a little bit over the top, it kind of made me think, like, I wonder if a lot, like, because right from the get-go, we find out that Harley is kind of an unreliable narrator when she's talking about her and the Joker breaking up. And she's like, I handled it real mature. And you see her like banging on the door and like really, you know, like upset and pleading. It almost made me kind of feel like, I wonder if some of the stuff that we're seeing is stuff that is kind of embellished in her own head, since she is the narrator character, like the explosion at Ace Chemicals. All of a sudden there's fireworks everywhere and that isn't realistic, but it definitely didn't need to be. And it looked all that much better for not being realistic. So it kind of felt like if you want to make a gritty, realistic superhero movie, you can make it gritty without having it be gray. The way a lot of other ones are. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I couldn't help but feel like when I watched that scene, I don't know if anyone else noticed it, but that truck exploded before it touched anything.
It did. Yes, it did. I noticed
like,
that.
It just blew totally up. Did. And then the building blows up. It's like, wait a second. What's happening here? It's like, was this just a stage set and they just blew up everything? Granted, it probably was. But it's like, and real life standards, it's like, wow, that's like so cheesy. That's old school kind of way of doing things. We're like, we're just gonna blow everything up and no one's gonna notice that things weren't timed out properly.
Right.
They were great.
That was one of the moments where I was like, I wonder if this is like if we're seeing Harley Vision right now.
Yeah. The new show coming out on DC Plus.
Harley Vision.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Now though, as someone who is very entrenched in the comic book world and comic book lore, obviously for me, I could not help but feel disconnected at times because I had a great time. I loved it. It was so much fun. Mm-hmm. But I'm always gonna overanalyze certain parts within myself. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, this was nothing like the comic books. That character's not who they're supposed to be. That person's not that person. They got that part wrong. Why isn't this like how it's supposed to be? I'm like, an issue 275. This is what happens. Why wouldn't they just put an issue 275?
You know? Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of inaccuracy.
Yeah.
No, for sure. Like, I mean, probably the person who was the most different from how they are in the comics would have been Cassandra Cain.
Yes, that's number one on my list.
By a long shot. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of other characters. I'm not really as familiar with Huntress or Renee Montoya. Obviously, Oracle wasn't even in it, so it didn't even really feel like a true Birds of Prey movie. But then again, if she had been in it, there was a lot of lethality, and I don't think that she would have been down for that. So it's kind of hard to... It seemed more like a Gotham City Sirens, but then again, Ivy and Catwoman weren't in it either. Yeah. So yeah, it was a Harley Quinn movie, I think.
Which they should have just called it that. They honestly should have just called it the Harley Quinn Adventures or whatever. Like, or just have that thing. Have it be called the Fantabulous Emancipation of Harley Quinn. Boom. Don't have to put Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
No need for it whatsoever. And you could have still introduced those other characters. And then there could have been a Birds of Prey film. Like, there could have been a spinoff from her film.
Yeah.
You know, because you didn't get to really connect with any of them. Like that, I think that's the part that was really bad about her giving the exposition of each of their backgrounds, is that I never got to really feel for any of them in any kind of way. In which I will say, Huntress's background, like her backstory, that was accurate. They got that right. except for the fact, which Jen pointed out very wisely, is that this girl gets taken to Italy at a very young age and it does not pick up an Italian accent.
She's from an Italian family to begin with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Lived in Sicily, yeah. Then just goes to Sicily, loses her accent.
It doesn't happen whatsoever.
Yeah. She's Gretel grown up.
Yeah.
But yeah, but she was actually, that's her backstory. That's pretty much it. But the fact that for people who don't know, you know, in the comic books, you mentioned Cassandra Cain. She's back. Mm-hmm. She's one of the Batgirls. For me,
right?
She's actually one of the Batgirls. I forget how much I like her because when I first was introduced to her, I was probably what I think fifth, sixth grade. I don't know. Going to a comic book shop, mm-hmm. and I remember seeing her Batgirl cover, and she's fully masked. Like you don't see her eyes, you don't see her mouth. She's like full on Bat Ninja. And she was one of the first Batgirls who doesn't even really have much yellow on her either. Like she's just full on black. I think there's just like a yellow outline for the bat symbol on her chest, but that's it.
Right.
She doesn't talk because she was her parents are actually from the League of Assassins. Matter of fact, her mother is Lady Shiva, who in the DC universe is like the most lethal hand-to-hand combat character of all of these fighters. Like she is the most deadly. If there's someone who might be able to pull off killing Batman, it's her.
Right.
And that's who she comes from. Like she's pretty much, before there was a Damian Wayne who was the current Robin, there was her. There was this Batgirl of Cassandra Cain, and she was badass as hell. And I loved her so much because she would just kick every dude's ass and not say a word. Because she was kind of raised mute. She was raised to not. I think she was actually illiterate too. Like she was so sheltered through her childhood. But she ends up becoming one of like the best Batgirls. And in this movie, we're not going to go that route whatsoever. We're going to have her be Harley Quinn's sidekick. It's like, whoa, what's happening right here? This is not Cassandra Cain. This could have been anybody. Why did you make it her? Why?
Oh my goodness.
I mean, it was kind of like what they did with Tim Drake in Batman the Animated Series. Like that character is Jason Todd, the second Robin, but we just pretend that he doesn't exist and put that personality or that situation onto another one of the Bat Kids. Like this movie did that again. It kind of felt like, but yeah, Cass is not, because even now, like because she was Batgirl and then she was Black Bat and then now she's Orphan.
Yeah.
And she's in Batman and the Outsiders and she still is that same like all blacked out face, barely talks. Like she is very serious and very kind of to the point. Not that she's not like goofy at times, but it was not like this. Pickpocket in foster care is not, they got that really out of nowhere.
Yeah. And she's a bit of a wise ass in this movie too. While in the book, she's very socially awkward. Like in the beginning, she didn't really interact with people all that well, which is reasonable. She didn't know anyone outside of the league and her parents, you know, while this girl got character and I get that. You probably don't want to show that kind of character, like that introverted kind of person. You want to have this person who's outgoing and does stuff that's, you know, a little crazy and everything. I understand the reason for choosing that kind of style of a character, but why choose her then?
Yeah.
Make someone new, make someone else. Like there are other options.
Right.
Which is kind of how also I felt with other characters too.
Yeah. The idea of Dinah Lance working for Roman Sionis ever.
Thank you. My number two character. Are you looking at my list?
I mean, it was very like, why would she do that?
Yeah. She was one that I wish they really would have shown us more of.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you know what? I'm reaching for her name now. Journey Smollett-Bell. Like, she did a really good job with the character that was written for her.
Mm-hmm.
And for my personal thing, like I hate the whole tokenizing thing, you know, like and this was a hardcore bad choice in my opinion from the beginning, because her name is Black Canary and they're like, well, let's put a black person to play Black Canary, even though she's typically a white blonde, or actually a brunette who wears a blonde wig, but still it's like it's usually a Caucasian person, and it's like, you guys should have went somewhere else with this one. This is too on the nose. But I gave her a chance still, and she did an amazing job. I liked what she did. But I think she would have been done an even better job if she played the real Black Canary, who was way too strong of a woman to let anyone like put her in a place where she's feels disempowered. That's not the Black Canary character. Black Canary is such like she's an alpha dog, you know, like she's usually paired up with the Huntress, and actually in the comic books her husband, who is the Green Arrow, she's far more of a leader than he is. And so it felt so odd to have her be this little bird to the Black Mask. Like, it was like, oh, that's not who you are. It's like her mom was the first Black Canary, and she was the one who is a part of like the Justice Society and Justice League. And then she takes up her mom's mantle, and she's trained by one of the best hand-to-hand combat fighters for the good guys, was Wildcat. And it's he's a like a boxer, hand-to-hand guy. Like, he's all fisticuffs. And they turned her into a more like a Taekwondo person. And that, over time of like ruminating on this, I was like, okay, that's whatever. That means nothing. But the fact that just that she was ridiculed to just being kind of a weaker character, and I get the whole sense of like finding your strength.
Yeah.
But she knows how powerful she is. With that sonic scream she has, she's over here taking orders from this fool? Come on. Yeah. She could be running that place.
He took her off the streets or whatever, gave her a chance or whatever it is that she said.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which felt like bull. I felt like utter bull, honestly.
It was just convenient, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Something I didn't know until the second time I watched it, that song that she sang was actually Journey Smollett Bell singing it, which I didn't know. She did a really good job with that.
Oh, her and her brother are talented.
Yeah.
You know, when her brother's not lying about stuff, the dude got talent. I loved him on Empire. Like, he's a good actor, good singer, and she's been doing this far longer than he has. I remember watching her on the Cosby Show. Like, I saw her as a little kid growing up.
Who is she on? Like, I don't remember.
She was friends with, I believe, Raven's character, Raven Simone's character.
Okay, so like younger years. Okay.
Yeah. So this is by the time like all the kids are pretty much out of the house and they needed some new kids.
I didn't really watch a lot of that. So that's probably why I don't remember her. Okay.
Oh yeah, she's got some skills. Like that's why I was open to her in this movie, because like I knew what she could bring to the character, and I was just sad that they didn't give her the character she deserved.
Yeah.
Because she did. She kicked ass. She literally kicked ass in this.
So much leg movement. Yeah.
Because those kicks looked brutal.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they really did. Yeah. They were definitely not just for show. Those were some really good kicks.
And she's got the legs for it. So.
Yeah.
It's true.
I mean, she looked good in general. Like, she looked very fit.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No one was a slump in this film. Like, no. As much as I don't like Rosie Perez, Rosie Perez has a dancer background. And even her fighting scenes didn't look bad. And she's probably about the same age as J-Lo. I think she's in her 50s. And she kept up with all those youngins, you know. So I got to give props to everyone. Like, they all looked the parts, and they went well above and beyond what was probably expected in this film. To a point I actually want to backtrack on. So yeah, so there's a scene where it's the big fight scene. And they're all together. And we mentioned how earlier in Harley's fight scenes, you know, they're all long shots, wide shots, no jump cuts. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, this is the scene out of the whole film that truly needed to have a one-shot rotary fight scene. Like, they should have just had, because they're in a circle. They're at one of the hideouts from the Joker and Harley Quinn. It's like the rundown fun factory. Mm-hmm. And this moment, like, it's like a circular the platform that they're on. All the enemies are coming at them. They're all trying to protect the little girl, Cassandra Cain, because she has the diamond that Black Mask wants. And it's a great fight scene. You could tell that if they had done it in one shot, it was set up for it perfectly. And it could have had that whole like Daredevil hallway, or even like Avengers Endgame at the end, when you see everyone come together for the final battle. Mm-hmm. And it's just one shot, but you're circling around everybody as they go through their thing. And certain things are comboed off of each other. Like, they had that, but it was all jump cuts, and you lost some of the hits and the momentum of it. And I was so disappointed, because it looked like it could have been just that much better. if they just did it in one take. And I know one take shots are hard. Like, that's choreographed stuff where everyone has to hit their mark perfectly. I just felt this cast and this team was good enough that they could have pulled it off. They look like they had the talent to do it.
Mm-hmm. And they're definitely, like, the set was definitely set up for it.
I can understand how that scene in particular would be, like, extra hard, because not only do you have so many different fights going on, but they're also on a rotating platform, and also Harley's on roller skates. I think there were a few kind of longer shots that they did in that scene, but it wasn't really spent on a bunch of fighting. It was like when Harley was like giving her the hair tie. But that's kind of all it was.
Yeah. It's just that one moment. Like, that was like, they're finally all together in that circle. And like, it was perfect for it. Like, this was the, cause you saw how they were working off each other, but it would jump to that moment.
Yeah.
Cut into that scene of where they're kind of working off of one another.
Yeah.
And it was a wasted opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah. It looked good. It just, there was potential to be better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I can't take away what they did there. Everything was still good. Like, all of the moments were great with that set. That set was just really weird because, you know, getting there, that amusement park looked run down, shut down, didn't really have power or, you know, cobwebs everywhere and just beat up. But wherever they were when they went down that slide, there was lights, it was pristine, it was kept.
Yeah, honestly.
But now going back to those characters. So
just
for me,
to clarify for anyone that doesn't know who the Birds of Prey are, what characters are actually, you know, according to the comics, in a part of the Birds of Prey?
I'm used to seeing, like you mentioned earlier, Jason, Oracle, who was the original first Batgirl, but then she got paralyzed by the Joker. So she becomes their tech person because she's super smart.
Yeah.
And so she's like, she's the dude behind the desk, you know, behind the computer, giving everyone their orders, you know. She's their Professor X, in essence.
Yeah.
And then you have Black Canary, you have the Huntress. Mm-hmm. And then there's usually like an extra person that can get thrown in and out, I feel, at times. Mm-hmm. I always thought those are your core three.
Right.
But another lady will get dropped in every once in a while. But it was always like, this was your go-to team for your femme fatales of the superheroes, you know, for the Batman kind of world, in which we only had, two? I guess not two of them were there. You had Black Canary and Huntress.
Yeah. There was just no Oracle to tie them together, which is kind of like before I saw it, I was almost kind of thinking like maybe they'll like kind of introduce her as a secret, like maybe these two are already secretly kind of working together, and there's sort of like moments where you're just like, oh, we're like they're getting their information from somewhere, and then at the end it reveals that they've been working with Oracle the whole time. That's kind of what I was hoping for, but...
Yeah, likewise. Because that would have made more sense for why Black Canary was even working at Black Mask's place.
It's true.
You know, that would have made total sense. Like, all right, she's doing an undercover thing. Yeah, I get that.
Right.
Perfect. It's like she has a singing voice. She uses that to get the job. Okay, boom.
He might not necessarily know her because she's... I mean, in this movie, she was like a Gotham City local, but she's not really in the comics.
Oh, no, yeah. But since we brought up Black Mask, this is another character which was, for me, like the only part of his character that they got right was the fact that he came from a rich family. And they kind of really just didn't give him the time of day, and they disowned him a bit. Mm-hmm. And then that was kind of it. And he had a black mask that he finally wore in the last like 10 minutes of the film.
I would argue that his temper was pretty accurate. The way that he showed it wasn't so much, but Black Mask is a very reactive, angry person that is like constantly being like, I'm really upset and I'm going to kill you. Like,
I felt like any villain is angry.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like, it wasn't enough.
It was,
you know,
his anger is very explosive in the comics, and he does a lot of yelling. So I felt like there were parts of it that were in there, but like the idea of him owning a nightclub and being at it all the time felt weird to me because
he
doesn't like other people. So like, why would he like, that's not the kind of clout that I think that the Black Mask in the comics is after. And this whole thing with the velvet blazers is definitely, definitely not.
Yeah, like for me, especially like they were trying to put him, because especially when they were promoted the movie, and I felt it within the film also. It's like he's a misogynistic bastard, and we're supposed to not like him. And who better exudes that than your typical mob boss from like back in the day, which is when like what he was based off of initially. You know, he went from being this person who was ignored from his rich family, and he despised them so much he kills them. He inherits their money, loses that money, and then goes to a life of crime and becomes one of the biggest mob bosses of Gotham. And when you think of that kind of person, that's the kind of dude who is going to be kind of a womanizer. He's not going to have respect for a lady, especially if the guy's going to kill his mom. He doesn't have respect for any woman at all.
Right.
You know, if they focused on that kind of stuff and showed that, it's like I would have felt it more. But they don't show that for him at all. It's like, I honestly got the sense it's like, okay, he kind of is just a douche to everybody because he doesn't even treat any of the dudes with respect either.
No.
You know?
He was the basically thing, like a overgrown child.
Yeah. Which is not too unreasonable.
Yeah. Even the mask,
I felt there was a flamboyancy to him that they were playing off of.
Yeah, they were giving a lot of weird coding to both him and Victor Zsasz, which is very not in the comics. And was definitely throwing me off. Even his mask, like his mask design was cool, but it felt like, especially at the end when he was talking to like the army that he hired, it felt kind of cheap because in the comics it moves. Like, that's either his face is just like that because of the fire that he burned his parents up in, or he's wearing a mask that moves. I mean, in the new, like, current continuity, like, Rebirth, like, he has this whole weird thing with, like, a gimp mask, and it's very bizarre. And I'm glad they didn't go that route, except for in his home.
Although it might have been his personality, though.
But it felt like the mask not moving made it feel kind of cheap to me. Like when he put it on, I don't know. It looked a little bit off to me.
It felt like there was no reason to have it, honestly. Like in the comic books, he has that mask for a purpose. Mm-hmm. Like there's an affinity to it, and it plays on two things. One, his parents, despite the fact that like they were douches to him, the special keyword of this episode, they were Gotham elites, and they would bump elbows with people like the Waynes. They despised the Waynes terrifically, but they would still, you know, be all cozy up with them, like, oh, it's the Waynes, why hello, you know. But behind the bastards, like, oh, I hate them bastards. And he didn't like the fact that they would wear these masks of their own, these metaphorical masks. So it was kind of a play on that. At the same time, he wears the mask the same way that Batman wears his mask. It's supposed to put fear into his enemies, you know? And the fact that he doesn't wear it through this whole thing, it's like, well, if you're trying to show that you're the badass, like you're the one to be afraid of, you should wear that mask all the time. And that would have played into everyone he talks to, where it's like, this guy's crazy. He always wears that mask. He's always in this club wearing that damn mask. Like, I can't have fun with him looking like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
So it was just like a throwaway. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, he's the Black Mask. So let's just throw this on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they were just trying to make it I'm putting this on because I mean business now. Because up until this point, you know, Zsasz was, he was just having everyone do whatever for him.
Yeah.
But at this point, he's like, okay, I'm going to get involved, sort of. So this is me showing that I'm going to get involved. I mean business. I'm putting on the mask.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because he didn't really get his hands dirty, which is not that character. That character will kill people. He has no qualms with killing people.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Which, speaking of killing people, we'll hop over to Zsasz. Victor Zsasz.
This was like a Victor Zsasz inspired character. This was different to every iteration of Zsasz I've ever seen.
I feel like the only part that nailed it was the fact of when they took his shirt off a little bit and showed the scars.
Yeah.
And how much he enjoyed killing people. It's like, okay, that's Victor Zsasz. But Victor Zsasz being someone's lackey to that point and just being like this afterthought, it's like, this isn't who he is.
Yeah, no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's very much a killer that is motivated by the act of killing, not by someone telling him what to do. And like the weird kind of jealousy that he was getting when Roman was showing Dinah like all of his weird sculptures and stuff like that. That seemed very out of character. I mean, I would say like the Arkham games do a great job with Zsasz, where it's like you're kind of like in Arkham City when he's just calling you over the phones like, you better come to this location or I'm gonna kill this person. But I would have liked to see, because in the comics his scars are tally marks, aren't they? They're not just random scars all over the place.
It's a trophy.
Yeah.
This is something that he yearns for. Like, he wants that next mark on his body. He can't. It's like that person who gets a tattoo. You know, this is what, that's what it is for him. And they didn't do that with this. It was just random everywhere. Like, I didn't even notice the ones on his face initially, and he had none on his arms. I just felt like they're not really going all the way for him. This was a guy who went on a trip to Hawaii, got his hair dyed, and maybe there was some broken glass along the way that he rolled into. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, honestly.
He had a bad drunk night.
Yeah.
And decisions were made.
That's the weird thing is, like, some of the other character changes that they made, I could see kind of like where they're a little bit like, for this story, a little bit more visually compelling. But I don't, like, to me, the tally mark scars would have been more visually interesting than the really haphazard ones that he has all over the place that look kind of like fresh scars. And I mean, maybe some of them were fresh because, you know, he killed the head of the Golden Lions and his family, but the tally marks would have been cool to see, honestly.
Him doing them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the idea of him also being, because he seemed like he's just sort of like a general henchman at that point, because he was in the fire squad for the Bertinellis too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what is he, just like an elite henchman that just kind of bounces from person to person, or what here? Like, what's the deal here?
Yeah. And I think Zsasz wouldn't use a gun. Zsasz is about knives, like kind of like how the Joker is known to be. Like, he likes sharp objects, he likes knives, things that he's going to stab you with, he's going to cut you with. You know, he's about mutilation. He's not so much about for the instant gratification of a kill. He wants to take his time,
right?
You know, so that definitely felt out of character when he did that.
Very much so.
You know, like, speaking, I think, yes.
I have a question. I don't know if anyone else noticed. I meant to ask you guys after the theater, but Jason, since you've seen it twice, maybe it's something that you noticed. Or maybe I'm just imagining things. So that scene where you see that Zsasz and Victor, and they have that family that's hung up.
Did you say Zsasz and Victor?
Yeah, Zsasz. Zsasz and Roman.
Yeah.
There I go doing that again. anyways, with that family there, and he's about to skin their faces. So the whole that family had their mouths were duct taped shut.
Yeah.
And so after you see him skin the dad's face, right? And you see it like, okay, he skinned the face. And it's the whole, there's a slab of skin there, and you can see shape of a mouth, nose, all that stuff. But did you notice that the duct tape was still on the mouth area after he skinned them? Because that's
like
what it
was on, like the head, right? Not the skin itself.
On the head, yeah. So face is removed, skin face is removed, but tape is still there.
I noticed that there was no tape on that skin.
There was no tape on the skin.
I did notice that, yeah.
But it looked like it was still on the body, but it didn't look like he cut out, like on the skin, like as if like he cut around the tape.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's like a hole there. It just looked like a sheet of skin. Intact, like perfectly cut, and then but there's tape still on the mouth, so it's like CGI, like CG glaring CGI error to me, is what I noticed, and it kind of made me laugh a little bit.
Well, Jason, you watched it twice. Did you notice that?
Yeah, the CGI on that whole part was a little bit weird. And they were definitely purposely trying to obstruct it, it looked like. So yeah. it was a little hard to tell what was happening.
Yeah, so I when I recollect to that moment, it's like I definitely remember seeing it. The skin had no duct tape, but it makes me want to watch it again to see their faces, to see if there was duct tape on them now.
Yeah. I don't think there was duct tape on the cut off face.
No. Yeah. No. I'm pretty sure that had nothing on it.
One thing I did notice the second time, which I caught a glimpse of the first time, it was just like a little background thing, but there were a bunch of signs up as they were going around in different parts of the city. And they kind of had this throughout the movie for, I believe it was something like Janus Corporation, like something like that. But they kept cleverly kind of obstructing or just having it be like straight up graffiti on the J. So it looked like it was saying Anus Corporation.
I didn't notice that.
it was like, because I noticed it really briefly the first time and I was keeping an eye out the second time and it was in there like a bunch. Once it comes out on Blu-ray, I'm going to have to like get it and then pause it and find all the moments where there's like an anus construction because it was definitely there.
Yeah, I feel like there's probably a lot of Easter eggs in this.
Mm-hmm.
That we just, since there's just so much visually to look at that yeah. you don't notice it, but I feel like there's going to be some stuff.
For sure.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that scene in the evidence room, I mean, that's the perfect spot for it, right?
Oh yeah.
So, sure. Like, you're almost going to have to go through it, like, frame by frame once it comes out. But it was, there's so much going on in that scene, like, action-wise, that I didn't really get a glimpse of anything in particular. And I was trying to look out for it, but I didn't see anything.
Which, speaking of the prison, or that little, like, when at the police station,
mm-hmm.
Jen, since I think should be decently familiar with the show Prison Break, because we watched that whole series together.
Uh-huh.
One of those prisoners in there, he looked like the brother from Prison Break.
The one that was in prison or the one Parcell? That was breaking it?
Yeah, I can't remember the guy's... Yeah, the guy who played Dominic, yeah. And he was the only prisoner who was actually kind of talking to Harley. And they kind of like point... They singled him out quite a bit. But you know, you don't see him again ever afterwards. Like, they don't have any kind of like altercation physically. But they made it seem like he was going to be like this big thing while in there. He looked like him. And I've been meaning to go back to the... like IMDb credits and see if he's in there. But I was like, man, that'd be great if that was him. It's like, he's always in prison. But that's just kind of the character he plays. He's in Prison Break.
Then he breaks out.
Yeah. He's in Blade Trinity. He plays Dracula. And whereas he's imprisoned in some kind of thing in the beginning of the movie and they let him out. Or you could just say he's in prison in a bad movie, but either way.
I didn't notice.
The guy, remember when the police are knocking on her apartment door and then she looks out the window and there's a guy launching a ball of firecrackers her apartment? That guy, for a split second, I think it was just the expression he was making, but for a split second, I thought it was Christian Bale because he had that, like, but with like a bunch of facial hair because he did that expression, like that American Psycho expression. And like, it wasn't him because I didn't see him in the credits, but I was like, oh, are they doing like a funny thing since he was Batman? Like, but no, it was my imagination. But I swear to God, he looked like he had that same face
for a second. Right?
Right? That would be awesome. Totally silly.
So I want to leave this part of the review on a high note. I think I know what it is already because I think we all agreed of how much we liked this. But what is the part of the movie that really like stood out and shined for you?
The sandwich.
It looked like a good sandwich.
That's what I thought was going to be said. That's exactly what I thought was going to be said.
I've never really, aside from the storytelling, because that was something that I really related to, like I said before, mm-hmm. but that yearning for like just your favorite food, mm-hmm. you know, like how the lighting was on her, it's just like, and the wind in her hair, it's just like admiring this disgusting man making her sandwich, but that was right. her sandwich, and like that was honestly my favorite part. Very relatable.
I think that my favorite part through the entire thing was actually her hair. Especially how messed up her bangs were, like after she gave herself that haircut of like it's the breakup haircut of like yeah. I'm having a breakdown.
I'm just gonna change. Cut my hair myself
immediately. Regret it. But I there was something really charming about the cute little pigtails and like the really hacked up bangs that I really loved, because it felt very authentic to a character going through that in general, and also to her specifically. Like her character in Suicide Squad had sort of like a baby Firefly kind of thing to it, where it was like, it seemed like someone was almost trying to write that character. This felt so much more like Harley Quinn, and so much of it was the costuming and the hair and makeup was so good.
Yeah.
I mean, there were so many parts that I liked, but that to me really stood out. Is like, especially there's like one super short part of her bangs that is just really messed up, and I love it. It's so cute.
I think I'm gonna extend to what you were talking about, Jen, because mm-hmm. we talked about this already, like the egg sandwich thing. It's like,
yeah,
I loved what followed, not just like her romancing the sandwich, but just afterwards of her trying to protect it and then losing yeah. it. And that loss, like the loss of that sandwich, and when she didn't get to eat it, was so dramatic. And I felt like she carried a grudge with Montoya and everything that happened yeah. around it, even deeper than what happened with the Joker, deeper than what happened when she lost her pet hyena. You know, mm-hmm. like this was serious. She lost someone so close to her.
So she said that you killed my yeah. sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah. The music during that part, and when it hit the ground and you could see she already had tears in her eyes. Yeah. That was really amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was that good use of slow motion.
You see that part in the trailer. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You see that in the trailer, and you don't connect that. Like, it's because her sandwich fell on the ground. You think, mm-hmm. you know, something bad happened to her in her life or something. That's, she's like, no. But it's because sandwich got knocked out of her hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something bad did happen in her life.
Well, yeah, you know what I mean. Like, someone very important died. Uh-huh.
Someone called egg sandwich.
But you have a connection to an egg sandwich in real life.
Yeah, yeah, I do. I think that's why it was so important to me too. Because like when we went to high school, there was a place down the street called Top Donuts. It was owned by this Vietnamese family, and mm-hmm. they would make an egg and cheese sandwich, or how they would put it, like, oh, you want the egg and cheese sandwich? And it was the best thing in the world. Like, I remember me and my friends would skip school for this sandwich.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it was that good. It was, and the thing is, in reality, simplest thing. It was just like an English muffin with two eggs and some like American cheese. Like white mm-hmm. American cheese. That's all it really was. And like, I would add an extra piece of cheese to it. But it was just like, I remember the first time I ever got drunk, the morning after, my cousin actually was like, what do you need? It's like, I need an egg and cheese sandwich and orange juice. And he was going to bring me to like McDonald's. Like, no, I said an egg and cheese sandwich. All right. And he's like, oh yes, same thing. It's like, no, we got to go to Top Donuts. This is where
on
we need to go.
The other side of town.
Almost. Yeah, almost.
That's so funny. Here's an interesting bit of trivia about that egg sandwich. I was watching Hot Ones and Margot Robbie was on the
season premiere
of the new Hot Ones. Yeah. So duck eggs, like a duck egg sandwich. Oh. Since she's like, for people listening that haven't watched Hot Ones, which you should, it's an amazing show. She's allergic to chicken eggs. So the one that she was eating was made with duck eggs, and that sounds so good. I want to try it.
What?
I actually had an egg sandwich this morning that was really delicious. Now I just want another one.
You had an egg sandwich, actually.
I made one right before we hopped onto the episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, see, I didn't get them. I didn't know everyone was having an egg sandwich. Now I feel like I need one. I just had chicken nuggets. What the hell? It's not the same.
Hey, we all ate from the same bird.
Oh, man.
But yeah, like those were our thoughts. That was our thoughts on Gretel and Hansel and Birds of Prey. And I totally forgot the whole thing. It's Birds of Prey and Harley Quinn. It's
the Harley Quinn movie.
Yeah.
Fantabulous emancipation of one Harley Quinn.
Not two, because there's only one. Yeah.
Right. There is only one.
But if you guys haven't watched these films, go watch them. Let us know what you thought. You know, I'm curious to see what our fans would think about this. You know, I know we always focus on the horror and the sci-fi and stuff, but you know, we love comic books and we love comic books too. And you gotta check out a comic book every once in a while. And this one I think is worth checking out. I think people should definitely take a chance on it, because this, I don't know if anyone's seen, but the box office numbers have not been good for it this opening weekend.
That's a disappointment.
I think that goes to bad promotion, but people should go out of their way to watch this film, because it's safe to say it's guaranteed enjoyment. You know, if you liked watching Deadpool, you'll like watching this.
I agree.
Where can people follow us, Jason?
You can follow us at Famous Monsters on Instagram and Twitter, and facebook.com/FMOFL.
As always, this is Famous Monsters signing off.
Till next time, guys.
Bye-bye.
We're bad guys. It's what we do.